Greetings. This is the time set for the argument in a consolidated group of cases, Bertillo Flores versus Barr, Enrique Perez versus Barr, and Gonzalez Ponce versus Barr. As you've undoubtedly noticed, unfortunately, Judge Berzon had her internet go down today, so she's participating by phone, and that was the reason for our delay. We were hoping that Comcast would be able to restore service. So. But these things happen over video, and we appreciate your patience with us. So, Mr. Kaufman, you may proceed.
Thanks, Your Honor. My name is Andrew Kaufman, representing the petitioners, and I'd just like to say I'm happy to be here today, and it's an honor for me to be able to argue this case in front of such an esteemed panel of judges. I don't see the clock, but I would like to reserve 5 minutes for rebuttal, if I may.
I'll try to help you with that.
Now, I know there was an issue with a motion to terminate based on some deficiencies in the notice to appear, but the respondent, the Attorney General, has filed some 28J motions discussing intervening case law, and I think the petitioners will concede that that motion to terminate is moot because of the intervening case law. So I will proceed directly to discussing the motion to suppress.
Yes, please do.
Okay, so the kind of overarching argument that petitioners want to make is that the agency, the immigration judge and the Board of Immigration Appeals, erred by not holding an evidentiary hearing, the type of hearing that's described in Matter of Barcenas, on their claim that there was an unconstitutional arrest in each case, and that the form I-213 that was admitted into the record as evidence of their alienage and deportability, that it should have been suppressed because it was the fruit of an unconstitutional arrest. So that's the biggest point, is I think that the judge and the BIA erred by not holding that hearing. Petitioners are arguing that they did allege a prima facie unconstitutional arrest. And in order to get there, I think that a very important question that the court has to answer is if the petitioners can successfully rebut the presumption of reliability of an I-213, because an I-213 is under ordinary circumstances presumed to be inherently trustworthy. But if the petitioners can successfully rebut that presumed reliability of the I-213, would that necessarily lead to the conclusion that there was an unconstitutional arrest? And I think that the answer to that question is yes, but it's going to take a couple of steps to get there. And that's what I want to talk about. But again, if they can, we haven't gotten, I will argue that they have successfully rebutted it, but that's a second point. But just the first question, if they can rebut that presumed reliability, does that lead to the conclusion that the arrest was unconstitutional? And so at first, I'd like to just explain why I think it would lead to that conclusion.
Can I interrupt? Excuse me. It's going to be hard for me on the phone, but so if you could try and listen up, I appreciate it. I'm wondering why you're assuming that in some sense the burden is on you. And I'm looking at the Sanchez opinion, which deals with a closely related issue. And it says that the government has yet to offer specific and articulable facts which would support the Coast Guard officer's decision to detain Sanchez on the basis of reasonable suspicion. So doesn't that suggest that it is the government that may need to do that first?
Well, so
that's the rule. That's the rule in criminal cases for a warrantless arrest, right?
Are you talking about the authority to detain someone to stop them for questioning, or the authority to arrest?
No, I'm talking about the arrest, and I'm saying that not sure that I understand that the BIA's position, including the opinion that you cited, is that the petitioner has the burden, but ordinarily in a criminal case, if there's a motion to suppress and a warrantless arrest, the government has to come forward with to show what the probable cause is. And so why don't they have to do that here? Sanchez seems to assume they do have to do it here.
So
with specific and applicable facts.
There's a couple of different competing burdens that I think are at work here. Just on the question of a motion to suppress, there is this case law that says it's the petitioner's burden to show unconstitutionality, and then if they can make a prima facie showing of unconstitutionality, then that would cause there to be an evidentiary hearing on the unconstitutionality, and then if a judge finds that it was unconstitutional, the evidence would be suppressed, and if after that hearing the judge finds a fact that it wasn't unconstitutional, then the motion would be denied. So I think the petitioners, because they're making this motion, I would concede that they have some burden, but I think that they've met that burden. But another way of looking at this is that anytime there's an arrest, the Fourth Amendment to the Constitution presumes that the arrest is unlawful unless there's a warrant or unless there's probable cause or unless there's a statute that authorizes the arrest. So we know there was an arrest, and so there should be some explanation of why there was justification for the arrest, because the government agents can't just arrest someone for no reason. That's what the Fourth Amendment's all about. But in this case, they submitted evidence that they had justification. They submitted a form I-213, and in the I-213, it says some anonymous Border Patrol agent determined that the petitioners were aliens and that they had unlawfully entered the United States. Now, if that is true, if a Border Patrol agent did determine alienage and unlawful entry prior to arresting the petitioners, then the Border Patrol agent was authorized to arrest the petitioners under the statute INA section 287. It says if an officer has reason to believe that someone is an alien illegally in the United States, they have authorization to arrest them. So that claim in the I-213 is very important. It says the officer is saying a determination was made. And if you believe the I-213, that a determination was made of alienage and unlawful entry, the arrest was constitutional. But I'm going to argue that you shouldn't believe that a determination was made just because it says so in the I-213. Or under ordinary circumstances, that I-213 is entitled to a presumption of trustworthiness. That's what this court's decision in Espinoza, which is cited in all of the briefs, it says that there's a presumption of trustworthiness of the I-213. But if the petitioners can call into doubt that form I-213, if they can materially contradict anything that's in that I-213, then it casts doubt on the entirety of the form. And
but
then
does it matter that the I-213 has absolutely no specificity? As I say, Sanchez says the government has yet to offer specific and articulable facts that would support the Coast Guard's decision to detain him. It doesn't sound to me like the fact that he determined this is a specific and articulable fact. It's not a fact at all. It's simply a statement that he did it, but it doesn't say how he did it or why he did it or what the facts were or anything like that. You're suggesting that simply because they said that, you now have to proceed to show that the I-213 was questionable, rather than saying, well, they just haven't met their burden at all. They haven't shown anything.
Yes, Your Honor. The I-213 itself has instructions on the first page that say that the officer should include in the narrative section the particulars and the details underlying the decision to arrest someone. And so when they just put well, I determined that they were an alien. I determined that they had illegally entered the United States. Trust me, because I'm entitled to a presumption of trustworthiness. That presumption is doing a lot of heavy lifting at that point. They're not explaining. All the form says is, I encountered this person near the border, and I determined that they had entered illegally. But the petitioners in each of these cases have said they weren't questioned. They weren't questioned at all. They weren't questioned regarding their country of birth, their citizenship status, how they entered the United States. No identity documents were taken from them. So I would say that under those circumstances, the I-213 is insufficient.
So you need a fourth to get suppression in the immigration context. You need more than a Fourth Amendment violation. You need an egregious Fourth Amendment violation. So, yes. On the facts in this record, what's the egregiousness?
Okay, so if the petitioners rebut the presumed reliability of the I-213, then that statement that an officer determined their alienage and therefore had justification to arrest the petitioners, that goes away. And now there's no longer any evidence in the record that there was any justification for the arrest. If there was no justification for the arrest, we just have this arrest with no justification. That's a Fourth Amendment violation. And
right, but you have to get suppression, you have to articulate a prima facie case of an egregious Fourth Amendment violation. So I just don't see on this record, just humor me for a minute, I just don't see on this record the kind of egregious acts that we've held constitute an egregious Fourth Amendment violation in this context. So help me out with that.
Yes, Your Honor. So an egregious violation is defined as a violation that an officer knows or should know violates the Constitution or is illegal. So if this officer knew that he or she was making an illegal arrest, then that would be an egregious violation because it's an unconstitutional arrest. It violates the Fourth Amendment. It's an arrest without proper authorization under the act. And the officer knows that they don't have authorization. The officer knows that they haven't spoken with this person, that they haven't articulated any details, any reason for making the arrest.
But I thought your position was really that the egregiousness would be open on remand, that they didn't get to egregiousness because they simply said that there were no more specificity was necessary. And what you would do on this record was you would send it back and you'd say, all right, if they want to bring somebody in and say what they actually knew, then we can decide what.
Thank you, Your Honor. So I was trying to make the point before the break that what we have in each of these 213s are specific articulable facts to show that the Border Patrol had reasonable suspicion of alienage. I pointed
but
out-
we
on
have
page...
to...
Go ahead.
Can I just ask a question? In order to do that, and maybe we have some reason to believe this, we have to assume that this is what the officer saw rather than what she told him, right? We know of what's in here is what she told him, not what he saw. Because
I dispute that for this reason. I think it's very unlikely that the petitioner would have told the officer that she came in 2.7 miles east of Hidalgo by raft.
But on the raft part. Well, so you're suggesting that we should take this to mean that he saw her on the raft.
I think that's certainly the case here, because I think how would this petitioner know it was 2.71 miles east of Hidalgo?
She wouldn't know that, but she'd know if she was on a raft.
Well, right. She would know that she's on a raft, right. But my point is that that type of specificity shows that only came from the Border Patrol. So he's indicating here that her last entry was 2.71 east of Hidalgo and raft, and he arrested her just a half hour later on the right side of page It says the date, hour of arrest, November 19th, 2015 at 8:15. And it says status of entry, present without admission, and traveling, and at length of time illegal in the United States at entry. I also want to take the court to page 111 of the Gonzalez-Ponce record, where it shows the 213, and very similar thing here. It says that this individual came in 0.3 miles east of Hidalgo by raft, and they were arrested just an hour after the entry. That's on page 111 of that record. And then we have the Henriquez record, which shows that the individual was arrested 384 feet into the country and was in a field at 11:30 at night walking with a small child near a field of solar panels. It's reasonable for an officer to see that and to think this person is not lawfully in the country, and they have the absolute right to detain them pursuant to 8 U.S.C. 1357 A2. They definitely...
Yes, but as I said, this is not cases, as I understand it, not really about detention. It's about the arrest, because they were then arrested, and she says that she didn't tell them before the arrest anything about her nationality or her name or anything else. So I think you're right about the detention based on what's on the record, but the question is, why are you right about the arrest?
Why am I right about it? In what sense, Your Honor, that it was proper?
Because the arrest has a higher standard, right?
Well, I think it's just reasonable belief. If you look at 8 U.S.C. 1357.
Yeah, reasonable belief, which we have understood, we have held means probable cause.
I'm not sure where you've held that the 8-1357 standard means probable cause.
Okay, well, I believe that to be the case, but go ahead.
Okay, so we started going down this path with the distinctions between what happened in Sanchez and here. And I think given that all three of these aliens were arrested 1,000 feet from within 1,000 feet of the border in well-known routes where individuals come into the United States, either through rafting through the Rio Grande or Calexico, California, where Henriquez was arrested, I think it's quite different than the situation in Hidalgo, where he alleged that it was because of his race, and this occurred 300 miles from the nearest border in Oxnard, California, in territorial waters, which are not normally a route for aliens to take to come into the United States. They were certainly not in compared to traveling across the Rio Grande or coming in through Calexico, California. So I think there's an enormous difference between the facts in this case and the facts in Sanchez.
Mr. Larson, can I turn to another issue?
Sure.
As I understand Mr. Kaufman's argument, he's basically indicating that any time a 213 is controverted by an affidavit, that the petitioner is entitled to a hearing. What's your response to that?
My response to that is, I think he's kind of turning the facts around, because it was their decision, whether it was Mr. Kaufman himself or the attorney that was at the immigration level. It might have been Jonathan Kaufman. It was their decision not to put the individual on the stand to bolster the testimony in their declarations that they filed with the immigration judge. They could have had them come up there and say and testify under oath that no, I was never asked about my alienage before my arrest, and they could have testified to whatever detention conditions existed that they thought caused them to involuntarily make admissions. But they chose not to do that. It wasn't that the immigration judge determined we're not going to have a hearing. The petitioner had the absolute ability to have that testimony come out in court. And that's kind of what Matter of Barcenas, the board decision, says, is that if you're going to show a prima facie case of an egregious violation, you can't just do that through a declaration. You have to bolster that with testimony, and you have to have the ability for DHS to cross-examine the witness to test their story before the burden would shift to DHS to show the specific articulable facts that justified the arrest.
Well, the problem, of course, is that whether there's, and by the way, the case about probable cause is Chishida Mata versus INS, 626, 2nd, 721. But leaving that aside for the moment, how is the person who has stopped supposed to know what the officer knew before he stopped her and then arrested her? In other words, let's take the raft, for example. How is she supposed to know whether he saw her on the raft or not? Even assuming she was on the raft.
Yeah, I'm not sure that she has a need to know what the officer knew or didn't know.
What happened to the probable cause?
I'm sorry, I missed that, Your Honor.
And how can she allege that there wasn't probable cause or reasonable belief or whatever you want to call it? How can she say the question is what depends on what the arresting officer knew, and how does she know what the arresting officer knew if he doesn't have to put some kind of facts in about what he knew?
Right. So I think that question actually inerts in favor of the government, because how could she know what the officer knew? You know, for all we know, the officer was watching the binoculars as she entered the raft. But he doesn't have to say that.
The officer knows what he knew, so he could write down what he knew, right?
And that's what I'm trying to say here, because in this 213, not only does he say that they came in by raft, and we could debate over whether he knew that or the alien knew that, but I severely doubt that the alien knew that it was exactly 3.71 miles away. But also, I point to page 106 of the Portillo record, which shows that the Border Patrol wrote down that he determined that the subject had unlawfully entered the United States.
Yes, may I ask a question? Because I'm confused, because we're arguing three different cases at the same time. Is the evidence on the 213 regarding the raft, is that in all three?
No, the raft evidence is in the Portillo case at AR 104 and the Gonzalez case at 111. Both of those were rafts. And again, both showed that they were arrested within a very short time after their entry, the timestamp of their entry. And then you have the latitude and longitude GPS coordinates of each of the cases. Now, the Henriquez case was not by raft, that was by foot. And the officer indicated, pardon me for jumping out of the screen for a minute, the officer indicated that the entry of this Miss Henriquez occurred at 11:15 at night, 11 miles west of Calexico by foot. Now, there's no way that the petitioner knew that it was 11 miles west of Calexico, but that's what the officer must have observed. And he arrested her just 10 minutes later. If you look at page 186 on the Henriquez record, he arrested her 10 minutes later at 11:25 at night in an area 385 feet from the border in the middle of a field of solar panels. He certainly had reasonable suspicion.
It seems a basis for certainly for detaining her. And she, and we do say in this opinion that you don't know about, that the phrase has reason to believe has been equated with a constitutional requirement of probable cause. So the question is, has probable cause, if that's all there is that probable cause to arrest you?
The government submits that it is, Your Honor, given the GPS coordinates, the time they were seen coming into country, the method of transportation by raft in two of the cases, the time at night that an individual was walking with a young minor, less than 5 years old. I think in that case, the minor was 1 year old, if I'm not mistaken, in the two cases. I think all those things, given that these are on routes that are commonly used by aliens to come into the country, unlike the case in Sanchez, I think all those factors, the method of entry, the time at night, the latitude, longitude coordinates, the fact that it's on a route that is typically used for aliens to come into the country from Mexico, Those are all factors that give the agent probable cause, certainly reasonable suspicion. And I'll take your Honor's case to mean that you need probable cause, and I'm still satisfied in this particular case. So yes,
okay, counsel, your time has expired, but I want to make sure everybody. Any further questions from the panel? Okay. Thanks for your argument.
Thank you, Your Honor.
Now, is Mr. Kaufman back on? I assume you stopped your video just for bandwidth, or were you off, Mr. Kaufman?
I was here. I was listening, Your Honor. I wasn't sure if I should be on the video the whole time or not.
Okay, no problem. You have 5 minutes for rebuttal.
Okay, so, there's two things that I would like to address that were just discussed. One is this issue about whether or not the petitioners, two of them at least, were observed entering on a raft. There's nothing in the I-213s that say they were observed entering on a raft. There's some notation that says by raft, and it's not clear when that information was gathered, or whether or not the officer relied on that information as justification for arresting the petitioners. We still go back to this presumption that just because something is put on a form I-213, that we're supposed to presume that it's true. And counsel for
the bigger issue is that we know that some of what's on that I-213 is information he learned from her later, because it says that she said this and she said that. So that's the question about the raft thing. I don't think it's a question of whether you believe it or not. The question is, when did he know it?
Yes. I would argue that, well, one, yes, we don't know what the officer knew at the time of the arrest, and it's not clear from the I-213. I think that opposing counsel just said, well, the officer must have observed the petitioner, but that's being very generous. That's assuming that the officer did something proper. But when the petitioners are calling into question the reliability of this form and the reliability of every statement made in the form, then that shifts the requirement back to holding a Barcenas hearing and deciding the facts. And that brings me to another issue that I want to discuss, or another thing I want to take issue with. The fact that the petitioners, once their motion to suppress was denied, and once the judge said that there would be no matter of Barcenas hearing, and we're going forward with a removal hearing, and the judge has found all of the petitioners removable as charged, at that point, there was no point in the removal hearing to try to relitigate the motion to suppress. So they asked for the opportunity to cross-examine the officer or to testify about what happened, and the judge said no. The judge in each case denied them, and I think that was a big error, and I think the BIA erred by not allowing that. So again, whether the officer says, I personally observed them entering on a raft, or whether the officer says something more general, like, I determined that this person was an alien who illegally entered the United States, if you credit that is true, then that is justification for an arrest. But the big question is, are we going to credit that statement as being true? And there is a myriad different inconsistencies that each petitioner has raised with their particular I-213. And that's in the opening briefs. I came prepared today to discuss the details of every little inconsistency in the I-213. There's a lot of them.
If I understood your position in your briefs, it was that all the relevant in the 213 was that he was arrested after he determined, and there wasn't anything sufficient as to what was the basis of which he had determined that she was illegally here. I'm looking at the two. Now you say that the 213 says this is the Portillo case. she was seen on the raft. I am having trouble, given the light and the computer that I am looking at, trying to figure out where that information is.
It's near the top left-hand corner on the first page of the I-213. It doesn't say observed on a raft. It says manner of entry by raft. And it's not clear when that information was ascertained or if the officer relied on that information in order to arrest. They really don't provide their reason other than just saying the officer determined alienage, determined yeah. unlawful entry. And again, they're relying very heavily on a presumption that we're going to trust that they did make that determination. And I don't think that they, when so many factors have been called into question about the I-213, the I-213s in each case say that they were advised of their administrative rights in removal proceedings. In one, at least one of the cases, they say that they advised a four-year-old child of his administrative rights in removal proceedings, and he acknowledged understanding those rights. That's just an absurd statement. There's many statements like that that are pointed out in the opening briefs where the I-213s just use boilerplate language and they say things that are demonstrably not true. So if they're sloppily done, and then they want to say, oh, trust me, I made a determination of alienage, but I'm not going to tell you how I made that determination because I'm entitled to a magical presumption of trustworthiness. So trust me, the determination was made. I don't think that they should be trusted in this case. I think that that's what a matter of Bersenas hearing is all about. We can once it's contested and once some material inconsistencies are pointed out in the I-213, then there should be an evidentiary hearing. The IJ skipped that and said, no, I don't need to do that. Well, I think that the IJ abused discretion by skipping that step. You should remand it.
Very good. You're a little over your time, but thank you for both of you for your efficient presentations. Don't worry about the technical difficulties. And the case just argued to be submitted for decision.
Thank you.
Thank you.